Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Wellspring Words, the podcast. This is your host, Kem, coming at you from a co-working space in Puerto Escondido. So if you hear any background noise, that's what it is. I'm here with another guest, as usual, having a lot of fun bringing people onto this space to chat about things that are important to me and important to them. And today we have Mr. Richie Billing. Do you go by Mr. or is that only like a government or official thing?
Yeah, you can just call me Richie. That's fine. It's funny, actually. I went to the doctors for the first time in a long time. I don't know why. When it came up on the screen, my name, it said Master Richie Billing. And it's like, I've never heard that title before. But wow. I was like, yeah, I had to change it anyway.
Master, that's intense. That's intense.
I think it's what they give kids. Young boys. I don't know. It's like an archaic way of naming people, but it's bizarre, isn't it?
That's bizarre. I mean, yeah. Where are you from, by the way?
I'm from Liverpool.
Liverpool. Okay.
That's why my accent's pretty strong.
It is pretty strong. But we're getting into a conversation before you've even had a moment to introduce yourself. Can you please introduce yourself, Richie?
I'm a writer. I've been writing for about 5 or 6 years. I like writing so much, I quit my job as a lawyer to give it a go. And yeah, I've just been pivoting one way or the other ever since then. And I've just recently released my debut fantasy novel. I'm very keen to come on and chat with you about writing and the mental benefits it brings, because it's something that has helped me so much in my life, just from a mental health perspective. It's kept me sane, particularly in the last year or with lockdown. And now this year, I'm keen to sort of promote the positive impact it can have. And the aim is to launch a charity called Project Anthology, which is, it just helps people learn how to write, gives them structure, gives them a bit of purpose and a bit of focus, and teaches them skills that they can take away for the rest of their lives. So yeah, I've been very looking forward to coming on and chatting.
Really cool. Thank you for sharing that. And I think that your upcoming charity is amazing. I love the sound of it. It speaks to a lot of what I care about as a teacher, as a coach, as a mentor, specifically when it comes to expression or communication, and more specifically when it comes to writing. And I break it down that way because I'm trying to sort of destigmatize, although I don't think it's truly a stigma, but sort of destigmatize the way writing is seen, especially coming from the academic institutional space, where it's like, if you are a good writer, then your writing looks like this. And if you're not a good writer, then your writing looks like this. But if I just kind of pull back and say, okay, what actually is writing? And for me, I see it as thinking on paper or thinking on the tablet or whatever. Yeah. And if it's just thinking, then maybe we can start to develop our thinking and develop our lexicons and develop our, you know, the vocabulary that we can use to describe our thoughts, even though sometimes the language can be limiting. And move from there instead of just thinking, okay, I need to produce this kind of product, because if I produce that product, that means I'm a good writer. And if I'm a good writer, then, you know, life is grand or whatever. It can still be grand even if you aren't, if your writing doesn't look like that person's writing, that person who got published. It can still be grand because the quality of your thoughts are coming from you, right? And they're like, they're refined, and you're expressing in a way that's authentic to you. And that in that way, it reaches other people and it has resonance for other people. So I completely see where you're coming from. And I think it's amazing.
Yeah, thank you. I've been involved with a few writing charities in Liverpool. And the biggest benefit I think it's had for me is, it's like when you've got loads of different thoughts swirling through your mind and loads of different feelings, and you're just a bit of an emotional wreck. You don't know really how to make sense of things. I think if you can sit down, maybe you can channel how you're thinking or you're feeling into a story, or even just writing about how you're feeling, and it can just help you unravel what is going on in your head. And you basically have a conversation with yourself and make sense of what's going on. And I hate it when people say this is good writing and this is what you should all aspire to do. It's so subjective. Writing is the most subjective thing probably in the world. It's like one person could pick up something that and hate it, and another person could love it. It's just what those words mean to an individual person, isn't it? And sometimes people can capture emotions. It's so hard to capture an emotion with words, I think, or that really unique experience to sort of put that into words. I think that is a real gift, and everyone has got that within them, I think. Because like if you think about when you go to parties and someone has always got a story to tell.
It's true.
One story, you know what I mean? And that is, if everyone's got one story to contribute to the world, why not? Why shouldn't you, right?
Yeah, I think it's like this inner belief that no one really cares about our personal story, or that like, I mean, many people have been invalidated in one way or another, or several ways, oppressed, invalidated, whatever you call it, restricted, silenced. And that, and even if it does, even if one isn't silenced in a way that really impacts their vocal tendencies, whenever you're silenced, it always impacts every other part of your life. Whenever you're restricted, it impacts every other part of your life, because when you're not able to be whole, authentically, fully yourself, it's not just like, oh, I can't be whole when I'm doing this, but I can be whole at every, when you're not whole, you're not whole. And I understand what you're saying, you know, like everyone has that story within them, and we should all be feeling comfortable enough to tell that story. Before we even get to that moment of being comfortable to share that story, we have to know the story for ourselves. So a lot of the writing workshops that I do are like, have to do with the internal world. It's always like this expressive thing. So going into the inner void or the inner sanctum, the inner world, understand, taking inventory and gently observing what's there, and then bringing it out. I learned this this method for writing poetry a few years ago. It's the list method, but this method can work for any type of poetry or any type of writing, really. Like, you generate the material, so that would be the going in and pulling out all the stuff, and then compose whatever you want to compose, whether that's, you know, a short story or a poem or this or that, and then you refine it or you revise it to make it sound like how you want it to sound. And that, for someone who's like a writer who's more well-versed, who has a lot of experience writing, who feels really comfortable writing, like you and I, for instance, maybe we can just sit down and do that in one session right there. Maybe it could be a short thing, but I invite people to try that and like make it a week. Take a week to do it. Take a month to do it. Yeah. Because if one has never actually gone in and started generating, like actually writing down the things that they're feeling or having the observations about themselves or the world around them, then that process might take a long time. It's quite hard. In that respect, for you, what got you into writing first? Like, what was the first, your like, I don't know, first-ish memory of writing, and when did it start to become cathartic for you?
I think it was seriously about 6 years ago. I remember, I don't know if you've ever experienced this yourself, but I know a lot of people, a lot of my friends, a lot of people I've met, but I've been through this very thing, and it particularly affects my generation and generations after me as well. And it's what you do with your life. I think you've got this pressure to decide what your purpose is and what you want to devote the rest of your life to doing, especially when there's all these serious causes and these issues to dive into and really try and solve. And I think a lot of people just don't know what to do. I don't know, I was going through that massively, and I'd gone into law, sort of done a lot of legal training. I was absolutely hating it, and I used to sit in front of the River Mersey, which is what Liverpool's known for. Well, one of the reasons anyway. And I just used to just want to be outside constantly. So sitting in the next to that just really gave me the push. And I just thought, life is just way too short to be doing things that you just don't want to do or you aren't right. Because I was doing law. I was helping individuals. It was a bit of a David v. Goliath job. So I was representing people who'd been wronged by their employers and had been seriously injured or hurt. So I loved it for that respect. I was helping them. But when you take a step back from things and you look at how the system is actually structured, so the legal system in this country doesn't actually deliver any form of justice. Or what people really need to move on, it just makes it the most stressful experience possible. I just didn't want to be part of that. I didn't want to make reading people richer. I just sort of fell into like a really idealist state of mind. And I loved it, to be honest. I quit my job and lived on savings, and then just threw myself into writing and taught myself basically everything I could about how to write stories and human psychology, how to create characters, what drives people, what motivates people. And I think it's if you ever have the sort of freedom to do that and just to dive into learning. I know if you're an academic, you probably know exactly what I'm talking about. Once you find the joy of learning and you throw yourself into it, it's just not better. Yeah, I don't know. What's your experience? How did you come into writing?
My own story?
Yeah.
Well, actually, sure, I'll get to that. But I just wanted to touch on what you said, because like you just mentioned so many really, I think, for me, important points. You know, like you had an awareness of what you were doing and how you enjoyed what you were doing, like to what degree you enjoyed what you were doing, and then to what larger degree you didn't enjoy it. It's kind of how I felt in a few jobs in my career trajectory. I mean, I've had so many different careers at this point because I'm just like, life is short. I don't want to do what I don't. I've always been that person though. I don't want to do what I don't want to do. And turns out I'm not going to do it. Someone else will do what they don't want to do, and it's really not me. So I don't have to like stress myself on doing what I don't want to do. I guess that's what happens when you grow up with three siblings as well. You just kind of be like skirt to the background, and someone else could take over. But and this whole idea of like, you know, leaving the life behind that you didn't like, living on your savings, and diving headfirst into sense making, storytelling, character building, world building. That's beautiful. That's really cool. That's kind of like the journey that I am in right now. But it's only that, but also engaging with people in the way that I mentioned before, with expression and all that stuff. And really, like, it feels so powerful to me to be able to engage with people this way, because I'm also on that journey myself. So everything that I'm teaching, or I'm guiding people through, or I'm presenting for people, is something that I'm also trying with myself every day and in the sessions. And the feeling that I have with that is what I can imagine you feel like when you're working with others, because your website is quite robust in the kind of tools that you provide for people and the experience and knowledge that you have. And when you're an autodidact and you're learning like on your own, you just gain so much more information from so many more sources that you're able to share with others, rather than if you were to learn from this institution and that one and that one and that one, that one. That's valid too. That's absolutely valid to learn from that. But when you're doing the self-learning and you become curious about these things because you have that call, it's really, really a beautiful thing. So kudos to you.
Oh, thank you very much. I don't know about you probably feel exactly as me, but I don't know, I just have always had a sort of innate sense of just helping other people out. I've never really understood why you wouldn't help other people. It's like, it just seems like the human thing to do is to always help other people. So I'd never felt confident enough to start a website or a blog. When I started writing, I never had any belief in myself and any belief, like sort of trust, or it was all, I just lived off hope essentially that people would read things that I wrote and enjoy it. I never actually believed that they would. So, and it's strange that the voice of self-doubt is just constantly at you, just telling you can't do something that you really want to do. But that voice comes from within. And I've always found it curious where that voice actually comes from. It's just really strange, I think, that we sort of beat ourselves up and put pressure on ourselves to do things that we enjoy. And it takes the fun out of it. One of the things that I try and encourage when people are starting out writing is just to focus on that enthusiasm and just protect it. Just don't let anything destroy that enthusiasm. Because I don't know, do you still get the enthusiasm? I still get it, but there's a lot of times when it's been stamped on, squashed.
Well, and especially when your hobby or your passion becomes your income source, you know, like, or becomes some place where you want to scale your impact in the world, doing that, then it can be really tricky, because what used to be you and your passion and this intimate relationship that you had just within the enthusiasm between you, now is like other people's eyes are on it. And because other people are into it, you now have to start perhaps taking people's opinions as valid, or you have to take those into account at the very least when you're doing your stuff. So that can really change the flow of the enjoyment of the process. But I love what you said about protecting the enthusiasm around the thing. I totally feel you. I just think back to when I was a child and I was an artist and a fashion designer. Like, I can't even say that I was into art and fashion design. I surely was, but like the way that my mind functioned at that point, and you can ask my people and my family, like, I was an artist. I was a fashion designer. I was. Yeah. There was nothing about it. Like I had time that I set to myself that I'm making clothing right now. I'm designing, I'm creating my collection. I have my portfolio for this season and I'm making clothing. That's what I'm doing. Staying till five in the morning to do that. For what? Yeah. For what? What's the thing? Because I love doing it. That was where it came from. So there is like that innate passion and creativity to do what I love in there. And when it comes to writing now, the same thing exists. Like I have that love and passion and creativity when it comes to expressing my thoughts via written narrative. But now that I'm focusing more on it, I do become a little bit like, do I sound like other people? Like, what are people going to think of this? But the voice is really not so strong because my history has told me that it doesn't actually matter. And I'm so talented in this area more than I even believe, because I have journals that I look back on and written pieces that I've written for blogs here or there or websites or whatever. And I'm like, damn, that is good. Like that is really good. Like that flows. And I mean, I just try not to be cocky about things, but you got to know when you're good at something. And it's time for me to stop doubting myself and thinking like, okay, let me try and shift this and change that and try to be like this, because who cares what other people want? I know that there's a passion here. I know that there's a talent here, and it's not even a talent or a skill. It's a gift. That's the gift. Everyone has their gift. This is part of my gift. I don't know what else is going to materialize in the future. So yeah, the self-doubt thing, I think it comes from a mechanism, like a control mechanism within us. Sometimes I think it comes from that. Like we don't want to go over the edge and say like, I'm the best that was ever created. You know, like all of you people can just fuck off because you don't know what you're doing. So it kind of brings us back. But I feel like the way that I'm envisioning it in my head is like, I feel like when we pull ourselves back, when our mind or our ego or whatever pulls ourselves back from that outer edge of thinking we're the best, the society that always tries to keep us inadequate continues to pull and pulls us down into the depths of despair and self-doubt. Now that you mentioned it, it just got me thinking about that. So there is a bit of like protection that we have to do, yes, for the enthusiasm for the subject, but also for our sense of self, like our sense of self in the whole cycle of creation.
Yeah, I think the self-doubt as well, the telling yourself not to do something that you want to do, it's a form of maybe protecting yourself as well, sort of like fear. It's a voice of fear anyway, and it's if you can't, that voice is basically saying to you, if you don't do it, you can't fail, and you can always have the dream alive in your mind, and that you could always be a writer. But it doesn't work like that, because the whole, if you don't do it, then you fail. That's the main thing. If you don't try, then you fail. So I've been there, and it is a very persuasive voice. I find it really curious that it's just inspiring against you constantly. And it's just purely fear. It's just racks people. It completely cripples people, doesn't it? Fear. And there are certain things that really do hinder us and hamper us. And we've got to go face it whatever holds us back in all of our lives, don't we? It's just a thing that follows us around.
Yeah, I mean, it totally follows us around. It's like a dog when you have food, except for not as friendly. Like a scary dog when you have food. That will never... The funny thing is, like a scary dog... when you have food that will never actually bite you, but you think that it will. Like we think that our fears or our doubts will actually come out. But the thing is, they are coming out, right? They're coming out because we're feeding them. We're giving them the ability to keep us from doing the things that make us happy and make us feel love for whatever it is. Yeah. But the minute that we decide to say, okay, go away, dog, or like, I'm not giving you my food. It has no choice. Like it just has to just not exist, because the only reason it exists is because we're keeping it within us in the shadows and kind of nurturing in that fear, nurturing the fear. Wow. Nurturing the fear. Damn.
It's weird. It's exactly, that's the best way to put it. Really.
Yeah.
Fear. But we alone have the power to get rid of it. So that I've had like lots of people who've had depression and things like that. And I always stand by them. But the only thing I ever say to them is it's, power to get rid of it is within you, and all I can do is help you and prop you up, but I can't defeat it for you. And I've been there myself, and then I know. So yeah, I think the power is within us all to defeat whatever voices holding us back.
And when it comes to storytelling and writing, I find, and maybe you find this too, when I have those moments where I just can't, I don't even know what's happening. Like, who am I today? Who am I in this moment? I can't put two and two together. I don't have a clear sense of my identity or how I'm able to work in this specific internal or external environment. Putting it on paper is super helpful. Even just that thing that I just said verbatim, I can put it down on paper. And then a few lines later, it's turning into some narrative and I'm adding some mystical elements to it and la-di-da. Like, it's a story now. So many of my stories start off like that, or my narratives. I don't know if I'll call all of them stories, musings, narratives, whatever. So many of them start off with just observations of how I'm feeling or what's going on around me. And then it becomes like an actual story, or it starts off like, not once upon a time, but like a traditional story that you would think of, introducing a character or whatever. And then it transcends into my inner thoughts and what I'm thinking about the state of my consciousness in the world at the given moment.
Yeah. That's a great way to do it. Yeah. You just must keep your writing mind so sharp.
Yeah, it does. It does, for sure. The thinking mind, it's always sharp. It's always so.
Yeah.
But like in your area, because you're a fantasy writer, right? How much of your life do you bring into your fantasy writing? And also tell us like why you are so in love with fantasy writing, if I could say that.
Yeah, I think fantasy, it ties in with when I really started getting into writing. And I always read fantasy growing up. So I was part of the Lord of the Rings on the movies generation, not the books, I'm not that old. So I was like 10 when the first two or three movies came out. The battle scenes and the scope of the story, I think, absolutely captured my imagination. And I just remember like just making games up in my mind, playing sticks in the park, stuff like that, like pretending it was swords and stuff. I just loved fantasy from a young age. And then Harry Potter, got onto Harry Potter, and then all them books came out. Funny enough, everyone used to call me Harry Potter when I was young because I used to have glasses and like big moped. So I just completely stopped reading. I don't know about you, when I went to university, college, just obviously start drinking and things like that. So
my situation wasn't like that. It was more like, you know, reading for school.
Yeah, exactly.
And not for fun.
Yeah. Take the fun out of reading. I law books, half of it's in Latin anyway. So I only really got into reading again when I was about 23, 24. And I was working with a guy who loved fantasy. And we were talking about all these fantasy books that we both read. And then he was just recommending ones to me. And then I was just delighted to get back into reading. And then as I was reading these books, I was like noticing how they were making me feel. And I'd come home from work, like long days at work, and you could just sit there and lose yourself and escape into like a fantasy world, like something completely different. And experience things that you could never really experience in any world. And at the same time, they were helping you through sort of real life issues that you could relate to, because one of the best things about fantasy, they are a lot of just human stories just in a fantasy world. And you do have the freedom to explore all different kinds of issues and merge things together. And and then I read Game of Thrones books, and that completely sold me. I just fell in love with George R. R. Martin's writing and the characters, and it just showed me the kind of fantasy that I absolutely love, and that's the kind of fantasy that I write, the sort of gritty human stories and that explore real life issues. Well, if you want to have a dragon, if you want, just make it a fantasy world. You can have magic swords, you can have white walkers if you want. With fantasy, you can do anything you want, but it's just a lot trickier to do it because you've got to create it all first. There's no sort of real world references or anything like that. But
imagining your imagination and other books and stuff that you've encountered, right? Like those would be your reference points.
Yeah, and fantasy is going through a very strange time at the moment where it's dominated by sort of Tolkien-esque fantasy. So everyone sticks to the same kind of things that he created, like elves with pointy ears that live in trees and pure dwarves and stuff like that. So everyone's just saying we need more originality, and fantasy is going through a great spell at the moment. There's so many new writers, and we're bringing really original and unique ideas, and it's just developing. And it's just showing, because one thing that I always despair at is the lack of acknowledgement fantasy gets about the sort of it sort of knocked down. It's like romance, I suppose. It's like it can address real relatable issues, not like the literary books that don't get considered for like Pulitzer Awards and things like that. Well, these books do that, and that's what fantasy is doing at the moment. So did you read a lot of fantasy yourself?
I used to read ton of fantasy when I was younger, and it got me, when you were speaking, it got me thinking about, like, if you want to know what you care about, how you see the world, just look at the kind of books that you read. Like that one will really do it. Look at the books, let's put it like this, look at the books that you're drawn to, because I think, like, as late 20s, early 30s, whatever, like in when you're sort of an adult or an adult, people might put things into your space, and you may want to read things that will bring you here in your career, or like attract these kind of people or whatever. But the things that you're naturally drawn to, that you find that sense of pleasure from reading, that's, I feel like, what your mind goes to. And I used to be, it's, for me, it was all about the, like, the vampires, the fairies, the, you know, determine your destiny, or like choose your destiny novels, and all types of things. And it totally makes sense, because I see the world as not just the human way that we see it. Like I see the world as completely synchronistic and very much intertwined with the material and the immaterial, or the physical and the metaphysical. So it makes sense to me now, but it's been a while since I really dove into fantasy as I would traditionally think about. But when you mention new types of more creative ways of looking at fantasy, I have not only been reading those kinds of texts, but writing those kinds of texts too. But I want to know, like, when it comes to genre, because some people are very, and it, usually it's older people or people who are like really traditional in this. Like they're like, we need to stick to what the parameters of the genre are. We can't be going here and there, because that means it's no longer fantasy. That means that it's this, or that is a hybrid between this and that. How do you feel about that?
I just think you limit yourself if you stick to a particular genre. So my fantasy, particularly, it will be classed as low fantasy, so there aren't many magical elements to it. There are different races that I've created for the book, and that's a fantasy thing, I suppose. There's like unique monsters as well, but there's no traditional wizards, there's no witches, there's no dragons, no elves. So that will be classed as low fantasy, I suppose. So
interesting.
Yeah, but I don't really limit myself to fantasy. I do write a lot of general fiction, so like you were saying, and you just get ideas and you just see what happens, see where they take you. And over the years I've gotten a lot of ideas that are just things that I walk around seeing in the street. And I mean, Liverpool homelessness is a big issue in Liverpool, and I've been involved in like a few sort of art projects that were related to homelessness and like promoting things to do with that. And I've wrote a couple of short stories about that as well, and they're some of my favorite short stories, because I feel like you have to do something. they're about something more than just maybe like someone having a fight with an orc or something like that. While that's entertaining, I want the story to do something. And I think after that, I started writing those kind of stories. Like, what is the point of this story? What is it really about? So that's what I really love now. And that's the kind of writer I've always wanted to be. A writer that sort of people go, well, you can read the book and take something away from it.
Yeah, wow, that's beautiful. Congratulations that you're the writer that you've always wanted to be. I mean, that's really nice. And it's only developing.
I'm trying.
I feel like you should embody it, because who's going to tell you when you're there?
Yeah, you'll never know. I think
you'll never know.
The doubt is back.
The doubt is back, and I get a lot of doubt coming through when I have people on the podcast, because, you know, like, we have our online presence where we can't sound doubtful about our services, and you know what I mean, and our offerings. We have
edit our convincing voice.
Yeah, exactly. But when you get somebody speaking, you know, voice to voice, that stuff really starts to come through. And I think that we should just embody what we're doing more, because we are actually trying, and we're living these lives, you know, like with purpose, with meaning, trying to create impacts for ourselves and for other people. And and I think we should be more comfortable embodying that. And if we find resistance, maybe explore the resistance. And for us, maybe explore the resistance on paper. Like, why do we feel so resistant to just embodying what we should be confident because we've been doing it for so long. But it actually takes me back. There were so many things that you have said throughout the course of this conversation so far that I haven't written down because I'm listening. And then I'm going to get to that. And I don't. One thing that you mentioned about feeling like wanting to help other people just feels like a human thing. Like it just feels like innate to you. And yeah. I didn't think about it like that, but now that you bring it up, it really makes sense to me. I just feel like the world of things, material objects is like, there's a very clear end point to how much fulfillment one would get with that or how much fulfillment I would get with that. Which is why I haven't stayed in the fashion industry for very long. And I transitioned to education because I was like, I need more impact. Like the impact that I was feeling with the fulfillment that I was feeling in doing fashion, it ended when I started studying fashion business or like after a while when I was studying fashion business, because I was like, well, this won't really provide much for people that will then go and extend and provide more for others, because the work that I find myself doing now, it's not just about me being able to, you know, disseminate information for other people at all. It's like I'm learning and doing as you're learning and doing. But I think a really good part about it is that you're developing your voice. And when you develop your voice, there's so much that you can do with that. It has really little to do with me. I'm just here trying to pull back those things that prevent your voice from shining and help you feel confident enough to dig it out and really express yourself. But then you can do some, you can like impact other people with that, with whatever it is. It doesn't have to be the same thing that I'm doing, but like, however it is, like when you find your voice, you're unstoppable basically. And if we return that back to this idea of genre and even institution and hierarchy and all the parameters and stuff, even within the realms of creativity and writing, there still seems to be this restriction mechanism to keep you from dabbling in that area. Like, be creative. Oh, no, but that's like not the kind of creative we mean. Or that's too creative. Like, no, your mind, be open-minded. Let's just get every idea out there. No, your mind is way too open. Like, bring it in. How does that help us?
It's bizarre. And like you say, it seems to be the way it's structured that almost inhibits creativity. Like, someone mentioned to me the other day, I think it was a teacher, and they were teaching kids how to write their own fairy tales. And I was like, I couldn't believe it. I was like, are they actually doing that? Because it doesn't get done at all anymore. It's insane. And particularly when COVID struck, the amount of money that was allocated to creative industries was like pitiful. And it just illustrates the sort of reliance these sort of institutions regard creative things. And you're talking about a mental health crisis. What's the answer? Is allowing people to tap into the creativity, finding a bit of breathing, finding their own voice, like you say, so that they can criticize and think critically about the things that they're presented with, and they feel like they've got the confidence to go out and do other things that they might want to do with their lives and travel the world and see things. But you know, it's the structure of society doesn't lend itself to creativity.
Or the creativity that feels like, you know, artistic freedom kind of creativity, because I feel like everything is creative in its own right, but only to the extent that it serves, I don't know, the governing forces or the governing force or whatever. And when you mentioned that, it really just got me thinking, like, the good thing is that creativity is an innate part of being a human being. And we have that within us. As long as we don't fall into the trap of capitalism, we don't need structures to help us be creative and to spread the joy of creativity, writing, expression, and just straight up curiosity. Like we don't need structures to tell us whether we can and can't do that. Now, in a classroom, I have not worked in like a public school classroom in US, for instance, and I haven't worked there in the UK. I have in Korea. And my role as an English teacher in Korea was like, I could be super creative. No one was going to say anything to me because no one understood what I was saying. So do whatever I want and have so much fun with the kids. And they really enjoyed it. But I know that in US public school classrooms, it is super limited. Like what you are meant to be teaching them is really so blatant that it makes me upset. The kind of roboticism, that's a word I think I just made up, but like making people into robots, making young children into robots by not allowing them to stretch.
Yeah, it's insane. So what you said there made me think, I always think creativity is freedom, essentially. You need to feel free to create what you want to create. And do you think like capitalism would be, obviously it's the way it works, and at the most extreme level, is to limit people's freedoms. So creativity can never really thrive. It wouldn't be possible in a capitalist society, probably, unless you change capitalism completely. But well, is that ever going to happen?
But my optimistic nature says yes.
Yeah, but I don't know. That was just an idea.
Yeah.
I'm a bit liberal. Well, yeah. Left wing. So socialist scouser.
Same, although I don't really identify myself politically. I just, I don't get into all of that because it's messy and I don't have the language for it. And
it is messy. I've distanced myself from it all as well. And like you say, I don't like the idea of sort of, like you say, identifying with a particular group. I mean, I say socialism because it's probably closest to what I align with, but not exactly what I believe. So like you say, I just get really disillusioned with politics myself. Mm-hmm. At the time when I was really motivated by it all. Mm. And my writing could have taken more of a political sort of angle, I suppose. But what I did do in you know, for Prize Event was make a farce of it all and just show
that
it's based on the whims of pure individuals.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's ridiculous. And people have given me negative reviews and said this wasn't compelling. The actions of this character or it didn't make sense. And it was like, I've got the points. It didn't make sense because this is what real life is. It's individuals ruining the lives of thousands of people just on whims and emotions.
Yeah. And the proletariat fair. Has to suffer based on that, or has to just conform based on that.
Yeah.
I find my writing to be political as well. It's not political. Some of it, especially when I was working in academia, more political because I just adapt very easily to whatever situation I'm in. Honestly, even after reading some people's writing, if their writing is particularly like idiosyncratic, then I will start to write like them because I'm reading their writing and that's what's in my brain. So when I was working at the university, my writing was really academic and very political. Like you could see straight up that this is a political message. But since I'm out of that and I have space to kind of just flow and be free and understand my own writing voice, I realize that my writing is still political, but it is political in the content, not in the message, if that makes sense. Like, you know, the nature of what I'm writing is a politic. It is something that ought to be, from my perspective, discussed as a way of looking at the world that may be different from other people's way of looking at the world. And if we're seeing politics as something that governs, yeah, for sure. A lot of what I write about is about what is the governing force of our existence? What is the governing force of the moves that we make and the way that we see the world and the love that we share and the love that we have for ourselves? And maybe if you would read it, you may think this is not political at all. This is just poetical. You got the word wrong, Cam. It's not political. It's poetic. But in its own way, I find it to be political. And I find when sharing it that I feel, okay, if there's a sense of tension here, then maybe it is more political than I thought, because it's not going to be something that pleases everybody on first read.
If that's what gives you satisfaction, and if you can turn around and say, that's what I set out to do, I'm proud of done that. You've achieved what you've got, your satisfaction, your self-satisfaction. And I think that's what writing gives me more than anything else. I'm sure it does for you. It gives you that satisfaction that you're doing something worthy.
Super satisfaction. What would you say to people who have written a little bit or want, okay, let's break it into different groups. What would you say to people who have written a little bit and are feeling that sense of self-doubt? Like, should I pursue writing as a career or a hobby or something? Should I take it seriously or not? Like, what would you say to them if they're on that cusp?
I'd say don't give up. And if there's an aspect that is worrying you in particular, try and learn more about it, because it's always like one of the biggest things in life is the fear of the unknown. We just don't like doing things that we don't know, we can't control. That's just a human instinct. The sooner we come to terms with the fact that that's going to be normal for most of life, because that's the point of life, we've got to experience it. And you'll be fine. Just tackle your issues head on, like learn as much as you can about things that are making you nervous or unsure. And then just keep practicing. Writing is just practice more than anything else. And I think when doubt really gets on top of you, you've got to remind yourself who you're doing this for. And it's for you. And if you just simply love the act of writing words on a page, like me, then you can always come back to that and find love. And there are a lot of times when you can lose sight of that simple beauty of writing.
So wholesome. I love it. I love it. I love wholesome things. I really, really, really do. Especially as I get older, I just love wholesome things, because I'm sure I could speak with a lot of people about writing and wellness, and everyone would have their own rendition and all are valid. And there's going to be something to take from everyone. But particularly why I enjoy this conversation is because we're coming at it from such, it seems like a compassionate space, like compassionate for ourselves, compassionate for, I don't know, our baby, you know, like the hobby, the thing that we love, like the interest, the passion. And in the world, in our world, passions and hobbies don't get that kind of space to be nurtured as they probably did when we were younger. And we have to be really mindful and intentional about taking that time and giving ourselves a space to nurture. And just, you're right about, like, if you like writing words on a page, go and get yourself a nice pen. This pen is not nice, but yeah. What I'm picking up right here has ink coming everywhere. But get yourself a nice pen, get yourself a nice pad of paper or a notebook, and make it a thing for yourself. Make it a ritual for yourself. It doesn't have to be shared with everyone. And try not to get caught up. I'm talking to myself here in the invisible mirror in front of me. Try not to get caught up in what the world is saying or what the world is writing and what books are saying, because books, ironically, because we're talking about writing, which could easily develop into a book or a novel, books are not timeless all the time. They become outdated super quickly, especially the how-to, the manuals, you know? Yeah. So trusting our own instincts, if we feel like we have something to share, we have some way of working with something, trust the instincts and take what you can take from something and leave the rest. Have the strength in the self, right? To be able to know that I'll take what I can and leave the rest.
That's a great place to put it.
What a conversation. It was wonderful. Thank you so much for entertaining this topic and like for being so into discussing it. And is there anything lastly that you would want to add?
No, I've just to say, likewise, I've had a really lovely chat. The time's actually absolutely flown by.
I know, it really has.
And it's been lovely chatting with you. And I hope we can do it again soon.
Yeah, that would be wonderful. If you would like to be found on the internet, where can people find you?
Yeah, you head over to www.richiebilling.com. I do have loads of writing tips on there. I've got short stories. You can get the first 5 chapters of my novel, Pariah's Lament. It's available on there as well. You get a free book on creative writing as well. So you just find loads of helpful things. That's what I try and do, just helpful things. So if you're looking to learn how to write fantasy or just write stories generally, you find some answers there.
Tons of resources. That's great. Thank you so much. Yes, thank you for joining. And for everyone listening, thank you for tuning into this episode. Hope that you got some encouragement from it. I definitely got encouragement from it and feel really in a good place, kind of like a reset to go back into my writing world and just like really do it for me, like examine the why. And when I come up on resistance, just examine the resistance and write through it and really believe in myself.
If you think about storytelling, it's similar to our journey as writers. It's like at its basic form, writing a story is about a character that wants to get from point A to point B, and in between is just a series of conflicts and obstacles. And that's what writing is. Like, if we want to become a good writer, it's to get from point A to point B, we've got to go through, encounter a lot of obstacles. But each time we face one, if we tackle it head on, we become a better writer. So that's what we've got to do. Just keep working through them, and that's how we improve.
Wonderful advice. Thank you again. And for everyone listening, if you want to keep in touch with Richie, head over to his website, as he mentioned, richiebilling.com.
That's right. Thank you.
And if you want to keep in touch with me, you can do so at Wellspring Words, for Wellspring Words, at Naturally Free 123. And also my personal website, bykem.co. So that's bynkem.co. Where you can find my own writing on there and ways to work with me as a writing coach and all types of other fun stuff, photography, et cetera, et cetera. Share this episode with a friend, let us know what you think in a review or an email at bewell@wellspringwords.love. Anything, just send us your love, send us your thoughts, and talk to you later. Thank you for listening. Bye.